Hey everybody, welcome.
Hello.
This is Ari Fox, Jen Yuchin. Welcome to the New Gaming News podcast and or videocast. And we are both on the East Coast being inundated with snow and possibly, the issue is I'm going to have to shovel out tomorrow morning. This is going to be backbreaking work. But I did go out a few times today and tried to sort of ease it a little bit, and as I saw the weather, it's going to actually have cold freezing rain on top of it, so when I get out there tomorrow, I'm sure it'll be a lot heavier.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy looking outside right now. It's all slushy and nasty.
Yeah, it's well, where you are, I'm in Connecticut, so we have colder air mass up here, so we're getting mostly snow. So, and you're South Jersey, so that's, you get a lot of rain. Yeah. Mixed in with that, it's very slushy and gross. So I actually prefer my little powdery. I was shoveling the powder. It was just like blowing away. It was so easy to do. So, but we have a lot of things on tap tonight.
Yeah, I got a few of them. A lot of them kind of like talk about similar things as well. The first one being Newzoo revealing their trends to watch in 2021, right. And I kind of like broke them down a little bit. So, more or less, mobile gaming is number one because it's getting popular, and it has been popular over the last year in China, South and Southeast Asia, and Latin America. So, they're saying that that's the number one. Sports following esports structure, not the other way around, because as we've kind of seen, everybody's trying to make esports the new traditional sports, and it's just totally different. So it's kind of the other way, actually, especially again with COVID, a lot of sports being canceled. They're really following the esports structures. This is something I talk about a lot because I believe that content is really important for any kind of business. So content being important even outside of like competitive play of organizations, like the content that they're making is even better than like competitions that they're winning.
And you mean the casters themselves?
Not even the casters, even like organizations like 100 Thieves or like FaZe Clan, they have content creators and streamers on their organization outside of just players. And that's kind of like more important to reach their audience.
So it's actually a bit more important than their teams.
Yeah, like you have the teams, of course, because it's esports, but it seems like a lot of their sponsorship opportunities come from a lot of their streamers.
Well, I mean, they have to figure out a way to make money somehow.
Yeah, kind of like them doing both of those things to sweeten the deal and make their brand better.
But, you know, it's funny because Newzoo is revealing these trends and what to watch in 2021. So basically they're saying that esports teams are going to be more media-based companies than they are actual competitive sports leagues or teams.
Yeah, that was my take on it, at least. Yeah.
Well, I think I probably could have seen this coming like 3 years ago because you own a team, you're not making any money.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't make any money for years. I mean, you know, if you didn't win a match, you're basically, you know, SOL on whether or not your team's going to go home with money that match.
If you're like a lower tier team and you're not winning as many competitions, you're definitely not going to get as many sponsorship opportunities if you're only relying on the eyeballs from competitive play.
So then let's go back to what I originally said, which was that esports is not a sport. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
Because it really is. I mean, that's what it is. At the end of the day, we're not looking at anything that's an actual league or sport that you can put it up against the NFL and ML, you know, Major League Baseball or any of those. It's not that. It's just another source of media. It's another source of entertainment. Here's a question though: who has the largest audience? Probably Team Liquid. No,
I don't know. Should I look it up really quick? Who's the Lord?
I mean, because you think about this, so let's look at it at the end of the day, what these owners are looking at. And I think I just saw a post, I think it was by Steve Archinette at Team Liquid, where he was like thanking everyone for like, I don't know, they have like a lot of followers. But I think they're one of the largest. But the point is that, you know, you're creating a competitive atmosphere, being esports. And now you're turning it around and saying, no, we're not we're not an esports team. We're just a media.
We're an organization.
Organization that puts company. Puts out funny videos, and we happen to play video games.
Yeah, so
it's almost a secondary thing. It's not even about the playing of the video games anymore. Now it's just about how you could be entertained by the streamers, by the gamers themselves that are
streaming. That's where the money is coming from, at least. Yeah.
No, that's where the money's coming from, because that's where all the content's coming from. But I honestly, I don't think that this model's going to last.
You don't think so?
No, because think of all the other things in online that they have to compete against. They have to compete against all the other entertainment companies. They have to compete against the publishers who come out with new games. They have to compete against other social media platforms like TikTok and Twitter and everyone putting out different content.
Well, if you're YouTube. An organization, you're putting content on those platforms, so it's not taking anything away from you.
Yeah, but there's so many teams. Why would you want to watch that team alone and that team only? I guess because you really like that streamer. But then again, you know, you're also looking at people who, you know, you're going to have to keep that engagement with that fan for quite some time. And even the almighty ninja has waned, you know, his following. They reach a ceiling is what I'm trying to say. And is that going to be okay? Or sufficient enough for sponsors to say, okay, you've reached a ceiling of 2 million followers, 3 million followers. You're not getting any more followers. And then after a while, does the streamer then become desperate? You know, like looking for more and more followers. I mean, what can they do?
I guess it depends, right? Like some people are fine with sustaining their audience, even if it is kind of like declining. Maybe they're still making enough to get by.
Right. But it's almost like every streamer now is its own talk show.
Yeah, it is like that, which is funny because in the same article, it's saying how streaming content is getting more popular and not even just gaming. Like the just chatting and things like that are more popular often than the games themselves.
So then can you compare a esport, like we were calling them esport athletes, can you compare an esport athlete to an actual athlete?
Well, yeah, think about like... Who's the one in Space Jam? Who is that?
Oh, Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan. Yeah, think about him. He did like the Ballpark Frank stuff. Like he ended up being a personality outside of just a sports athlete.
Of course. But can every esport player be a streamer?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. That means every single guy on all the teams have to have a specific type of personality.
They might not be good, but maybe they're a good like game player. Maybe their skills are high, but their social game is.
And
low.
How long does that streamer then play under the 100 Thieves, the 100 Thieves banner? Mm-hmm. Or the Team Liquid banner. So now let's say they've already gotten a 2 million, 3 million followers. What if they turn around tomorrow and say, you know what? I don't know, some new streaming company opens. I don't know, VenTV, Ven.TV, which nobody likes. But even if VenTV got some kind of financial influx, you know, they raised a whole ton of money. And they said, okay, why don't you come and talk over on our platform?
I think that's where contracts come in, because a lot of popular streamers are contracted by either YouTube or Twitch or Facebook Gaming or whatever.
So they're locked in.
Yeah, I think eventually, if they're not locked in yet, that's when the kind of war for them happens.
Right. And then there's situations, though, that another team might give them offer more money and they could leave, and then that team loses that sponsorship because the sponsorship goes with them and so do all the followers.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's almost like
about talent at the time. And so
let's put this into people who might be watching out there that don't understand esports that much, but let's put this into context of like television broadcasting companies. So let's say there's one show or one person, one talk show host. Let's make it talk show host. So there's, I don't know, what's his name? Jimmy Kimmel. So Jimmy Kimmel's on a show and he has all the sponsors. Everybody follows him. But NBC or CBS offers Jimmy Kimmel a lot more money to go to that platform. Now, ABC's lost on Jimmy Kimmel because Jimmy Kimmel could go over there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also based on his contract, right?
Yes.
That's what you're saying? So, yeah. But, you know, that's why I say it's a very shaky model for these teams.
Yeah, that's very shaky.
If those teams lose that person, you know, they're up Schitt's Creek.
Well, if you don't mind me jumping to the last article on our list, because it like correlates to what we're saying. It says, understanding the esports audience, the data deficit.
Yeah.
So pretty much this article is talking about what you and I often talk about, which is how like data can get kind of warped, or people just kind of like don't understand where it's coming from or the sources or anything like that.
Yeah,
and that's what they're talking about. And as for like advertising and streamers and organizations and things like that, what this company, I think they're called Pico, is trying to do is they're trying to like reach out to. So there's two different types of your audience. There's the ones that are buying things that are in your database where you have all their information because they're actually buying stuff from you. And then there's the other one where they're just kind of like anonymous and you don't know anything about them. So what this company is trying to do is like directly pull them. So their example was like, again, let's say you have 100 thieves, like, and you want to know like which sponsorship that they should get from a fast food company, In-N-Out, McDonald's, whatever. That's happening a lot right now in the entertainment industry with these fast food chains. So pretty much what this company Pico is going to do is it's going to directly message the viewers who are often anonymous if they're not buying something and asking them like, what's your favorite fast food chain? And then taking that data, let's say they pick Jack in the Box, or I think that's one of them. Let's say they pick In-N-Out Burger or Shake Shack. Then that company can go to Shake Shack, be like, hey, this is what our audience likes. Why don't you sponsor us?
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah. So it kind of like dives deeper into that, more value, giving the sponsors more value.
So what do they do?
So they know what they're doing.
They do a research on their audience?
Yeah, pretty much. I think they take the data from the audience, and then they're like directly messaging them or engaging with them, over social media. It seems like.
Well, that's a common thing. But here's the other part of it.
Seems to be a little bit more targeted.
Yeah, so this is the other part of it. If a company like Facebook or Google, well, Google Gaming has their own platforms. So Google knows when you do searches and everything, what you're looking for, what you've shopped for.
Yeah, they even know like what page you're going to after.
Right, what page you're going to and where you've been.
From.
If you've been on the Amazon site, if you bought stuff from Amazon, if you bought stuff on Grubhub, all these platforms that go through the Google system. So now, if Google Gaming turned around and set up their own streaming network, they would have pinpointed accuracy, knowing each individual person's data of whoever they're streaming. So they can either sell that information, which is, you're saying this company, I bet you this company's probably bought that information from companies like Google and Facebook and then is reselling it, or it's putting it into or pumping that data into the streamers that are, or into the viewers that are watching those streamers stream. I mean, it makes sense. I mean that's how I would see it, and how
that's what they're saying,
right? Which is actually, you know, it's getting, you know, it's all becoming very more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it needs to,
right? So in the beginning, well, because they want to make money.
Yeah,
I mean, these investors, all these people have been pumping tons, millions and millions of dollars into, you know, these different teams, are like turning around going, you know, I want my money back, or I want to make money from this. Yeah. So let's figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, because even if they have high viewership, you don't know like who that audience is at all. So the numbers are kind of like meaningless, especially if you're non-endemic to esports. Like if you're just an outside company trying to make money by sponsoring this team, because this amount of people are going to see your logo and going to see what you're about. That doesn't mean it's going to convert.
But all that data research and all that data that's pumped into the back end of the stream to the viewers, they have to pay money for that. Somewhere, somebody has to pay for that data.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be passed on now to the sponsor. Is the sponsor going to be willing to pay that kind of money to get you know, to reach that audience?
Yeah, that I'm unsure of. They obviously don't go into that.
So, I'm just telling you, I'm just speaking up the cup. I saw an article about Fortnite, and Fortnite is setting up an experience with the Super Bowl. That's coming up next weekend. So there's going to be this interaction with the Super Bowl. Verizon is a big advertiser, obviously, of the Super Bowl. So they're trying to get the Fortnite audience to connect or watch the Super Bowl. I don't know if that's going to, you know, directly translate. But here's the thing. If you took the video that I've shown before on this cast, where we can do three-D environments and connections with gamers. So if you place the gamer in the gamer world, rather than having some streamer, and this is where I say it gets shaky, because when a streamer is streaming from 100 Thieves and he's got an audience of 3 million and he's told he has to speak about In-N-Out Burger or something like that, or he has to push his advertisers, or they break for advertising, are they going to lose those streamers? For now you've gone corporate-y. Now you're corporate. You're just, what's the difference between a viewer watching a streamer on Twitch playing video games and then having to break for advertising? I mean, nobody likes to watch ads anymore. Nobody wants to, you know, I think the master of this, if you want to go back to the 90s when Howard Stern started his show, he really did a lot for like companies like Snapple and stuff like that in the beginning. But, you know, he started with endemic, very grassroots brands, and he would integrate them into his broadcast.
So he was one of the first ones to do that, because that's what I was going to say. It needs to be entertainment.
Right. So he would create, it would just come up. He was brilliant in the way he interlocked the ad with the actual radio cast that he was doing. Like, so you could not tell whether or not he was actually talking about the product that he was pushing, or that it was part of the conversation. He would make it part of the conversation. I don't know any streamers that are that talented, but they...
I think a lot of people on podcasts do that. And the example I love to bring up, even though I've brought them up three times today, is 100 Thieves with the Tostino's pizza rolls that they did, where they just literally had a food fight. Right. And, like, that was just content to a viewer that was fun, but it was also an advertisement.
Right, because it's placement. So I guess that's been perfected, but, and I guess people train to learn how to do that, to interact with the brand. But
like a lot of streamers will like make fun of it. Like, even though they're advertising for a sponsor, they'll kind of like joke about it. Well, and that's enough.
Now I have to talk about the guys that pay the bills.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it works.
I guess. I mean, let's see. You know, I actually
it's a good product.
I talked to guys at Gillette Razors, and they said to me, because I was trying to get them as a sponsor to GameCon, and they're like, "Well, we're already doing video game and esports advertising."
Where? I said,
yeah, exactly. and they were like, "They're like, well, we have a streamer. I forgot his name, but it was a guy down in Latin America." And I looked him up. His biggest stream, he did have a huge amount of followers. I think his biggest stream was 1.7 million or 2 million viewers at one time. Wow. But that the other casts that he had done ranged only from like 10,000 to like, you know, so he must have had somebody on his show or somebody that, you know, and it's all in Spanish and everything. Right. So it boosted his number somehow. Mm-hmm. But my point is that in a lot of ways, I think if you don't, you know, like, these guys will just pass off their marketing to any person that has high numbers. But, you know, it's whether or not it's the quality of how they're delivering that sponsor, as opposed to just, you know, just doing their cast. And I didn't see, by the way, I watched a bunch of his streams and I didn't see him push Gillette once. So that's, I don't know exactly what they're paying what for. They're, in fact, I don't think they, I honestly don't think they do.
Yeah, probably not.
In a company, in a company that big, they just write it off and go, okay, we have,
oh, this person has this many followers. This is their most watched video. Like, oh, done. They don't even look into it.
And, yeah, and it's just, it's like off a checkbox. Well, yeah, we covered esports and video gaming with these three streamers, and that's
it. Yeah. Well, that's what the second article talks about, too, because I have a few that just talk about data and analytics and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're saying. They're like, so if you have like 6.39 million hours watched, does that mean a lot of people are watching it for a little bit? Does that mean a little, like a lesser amount of people are watching it for a long time? Like, that doesn't exactly paint a picture of why you should sponsor somebody just because they have like 6 million hours of people watching them, because that, it depends on what's actually behind that. Because if you're only watching them for a little bit, you're probably going to miss the ad break. So you have to kind of look behind the numbers and see and look deeper as to why you should sponsor somebody, not just going blindly by the numbers. Like,
well, that. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, I think, you know, the numbers, even if we went back to the first article we talked about, the News Reveals Trends to Watch, you know, they do puff up a lot of things where these numbers on Twitch and stuff like that are extremely confusing and very misleading.
Yes.
So, you know, like I remember a couple of years ago, everybody was like, well, if you took the NHL and National League Hockey and the World Series, you know, the League of Legends Championship Series had more viewers than they did combined.
But how long were they watching? Where exactly, were they from?
Right. How long were they watching? How long were they engaged in? You know, it's not as simple as when, and this is interesting too, because Nielsen, the Nielsen ratings of television, mm-hmm. from that, you know, the Nielsen ratings go back to, I don't know, the 1930s, I guess, when they started tracking what people watch TV. But, you know, it's not as simple as when the Nielsen ratings could watch, because when there were ways that they could tell how many people had tuned in, because there were numbers that they could see. So if somebody went to that channel and they were watching that show, and they could tell how long you were on the channel for.
Yeah.
So they could,
they can tell now, they're just not telling you.
Right. They're not telling you because millennials and Gen Z's flip. They're like channel flippers.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I know I am, especially with stuff like TikTok. Like, oh, this video is more than 30 seconds. Yeah. I don't know if I could watch that.
I know. So it's hysterical because I'm a little bit more patient with it. So like when I'm watching TikTok, the guy's like, I saw this one video where he's saying, okay, well, if you wait 20 seconds, you'll get a lot out of this. If you've waited 25 seconds, you're one of the better ones. If you now come to the end of the video, you're going to get rewarded, you know, but it's like,
it's funny.
Even the people who make the videos in TikTok know that people won't stay on them for very long. And I think, in a lot of ways, that is our culture. It's a constant, you know, if you know, I don't know if anyone constant out there
stimuli.
It's almost like you're not really seeing anything. It's like this, you know, it's like this. All you're seeing is and it's just forever. It just goes on and on and on. And this is what people do when they're also watching Twitch.
Yeah.
You know, they're flipping from one thing. They'll stay on something for maybe 10 seconds, 30 seconds, unless it's something that is very interesting, which is why, like, they may think that, like, somebody's, like, going to be, like, if it's, let's say it's a Call of Duty game, and, you know, there's one team's going to net, you know, at the very end of a game, and they're about a match, and they're about to be annihilated. They'll wait for that annihilation. But how long is that going to take, you know? 10 seconds, you know, 13 seconds. We don't know. But the truth is everything is so fast paced that there isn't even time for the ad. there isn't even time for you to find out. Like, sponsors are just doing this blindly. They're so, they don't even realize how fast things are going.
Yeah.
And that's our world today. It's how things work, you know? And it's funny because with all this data analytics and the trends and everything, I wanted to touch on this Allied Esports Entertainment, because I mean, you've been at the HyperX Arena in Luxor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
I have some notes on here, the Allied Esports.
And it's been talked about a lot.
Yeah, so pretty much they're thinking about selling the World Poker Tour. And what it says is that they would change its name, possibly, and use its cash resources to explore other opportunities in online entertainment, including but not limited to real money gaming and other gaming sectors. So while I'm not personally that familiar with the World Poker Tour, do you think that it would be missed if it went away?
Well, they did sell it.
Yeah, but... Yeah, they sold it, but they're thinking of selling the assets completely and not running it anymore. Because that's what it said.
Right. Well, because they're basically running out of cash.
Yeah.
I mean,
so it's not popular. So they're going to take this liquid, like, what did they, was it liquid, what liquidize it?
Liquidate.
Yeah, they're going to liquidate it and then put it into other assets. And I think that's good for them. I don't know what they're going to put it into, but I think it makes sense for them, especially if the World Poker Tour isn't popular anymore. I mean, I've never watched it. I think my mom maybe watched it.
Well, here's the thing with the World Poker Tour. What they paid for it, they sold it for less than they paid for it.
Brutal.
And
now they're just probably going to get rid of it and put it into something else.
Well, now they want to get rid of the esports assets, which means they want to sell the arena. Now, they dumped $30 million into that arena.
Is that what they're saying on here?
Well,
is that what they mean, you think?
What do you think? I mean, I'm going to say something, and you know, Murphy Vanderbilt, the guy you work with, they own Helix Esports.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest move he made was selling to Grant Johnson.
Yeah, he's still an owner of it.
He's still an owner, but he's still got cash.
Yeah.
They're
planning on making more, too. He's opening up more centers.
It was a 50-50 deal because it was 50% equity. I think they got 50% of an equity and 50% cash. So he's got about $20 million cash into the project. But here's the thing. No one was going to these places during COVID.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think I almost had an article saying that like Las Vegas, like obviously the percentage of people that were visiting there went way down. So I didn't think it was relevant because like obviously because of COVID.
Right. So the idea that Vanderbilt actually made out because he got $20 million for properties that haven't even really been operating at capacity. Yeah. For almost a year.
You know why I don't think that esports arenas are going to work? Because like, who's going to consistently be a member? At that point, you would just buy your own PC.
Exactly. I think they're a bad model. They were a bad... Listen, people used to set up LANs all the time and try to create them, but I don't think they're a good model.
It's not like an arcade, like a Yestercades in New Jersey, where like you can play all the old arcade games. It's not like that, because obviously you're not going to invest in a retro game collection, but you might invest in a nice computer rather than having a membership to a LAN center. That doesn't really make sense. If you can afford a membership, you're probably just going to buy a PC.
Well, if you're going to set up a LAN center where you can walk in the door and sit down and play someone else and win money, I think you could, that's...
Yeah, so you're thinking that it just definitely just needs to be a gambling center, right?
Yeah.
And why not? That's probably what he was slowly planning, and I bet a lot of these places were slowly planning that.
Well, I know it's
getting more popular. Just, is that possible, though? Like, is that something in the near future that could happen?
That's part of the Esports Entertainment Group's plan.
Hmm.
I mean, they're going to take...
That's what they're doing, then.
Yeah, they want to put betting... You know,
makes sense. It's the new casino. That's what it's going to be. The new casino.
Right. But then on top of that, there's more. I mean, when you walk into a casino and you're going to go in the future, we've been talking about this for years, when you go and you sit down and you're going to play one-on-one against somebody either in the casino or somewhere playing somewhere else and winning money with it in a brick and mortar, you want more. And yeah. I don't mean more in along the lines of more interactive video gaming. I mean more in the along the lines of more competitive play to win money. Like, so more experiences like playing a VR game and winning money doing that, or yeah. or having like augmented reality experiences, holograms, all kinds of cool scientific, sci-fi, wild stuff that you would see in a movie be part of your experience at a casino when you're visiting.
Yeah.
Because that just makes your whole reason to come back more and you know, do it. So, but anyway, but that's interesting talking about that. And then you went on to talk about, you put in here, I don't know, the Tennessee regulators approved William Hill win online sports betting. We're talking about the betting on one-on-one. This is just more of an expansion into the sports betting side of things. And, you know, recently between our casts that we've had, Sheldon Adelson, who was the owner of the Sands Casino, passed away.
Oh, rest in peace.
Yeah, and he was one of the last standouts to try not to have online gambling, which is why Nevada still doesn't have online gambling. But you know, online gambling is going to also lead to interactive video game competitions, one-on-ones and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that'll pull people back into the casino. So that's going to open up a lot of doors in Nevada, which is going to, they're going to be able to push their reach out to the whole world by saying, hey, you could play, blackjack, video games, poker, whatever on our platform, win money, win comps to come and stay at a hotel. And then that'll bring people more into the fray to play at the casino itself. So there's a lot of things that are going to happen in the future. If you talk about, you know, Newzoo's reveals trends to watch in 2021, there's a lot of reveal trends that are going to happen in the casino industry as well.
Yeah, so, it just needs the pretty much the green light.
And this is just part of that, Tennessee regulators with the William Hill win and online sports betting thing. That's just more and more states are going behind and jumping on the bandwagon for sports betting. So
yeah, finally.
So the core principles of branding apply to esports. Turquoise?
Yeah, so Turquoise is just a brand that's rebranded, and I wanted to put this up here because it kind of correlated with the other articles too, pretty much just saying like it's a deep dive into modern branding, in my opinion, and yeah. What they're really going for is they're talking about how you just need everything on your digital platform to be like interactive and visually engaging. So they talk about visual branding, how like, of course, it goes more than a logo. You need movement, you need audio, you need your animation and interactivity beyond just like your logo type. And it's just a new world of branding that you need to get into. It also talks about how you need to get a little bit more flexible with your property. Like what we were talking about before, again, with esports organizations also having streamers on board, even though they're not competitive players, it's to push the brand out. It's saying that you need to start thinking about these like multi-tier branding for not just what you are selling, but the outside of that with like your content as well. It's just all an extension, and the younger audience needs a little bit more visually than a logo sitting stagnant in the corner that nobody's going to see. It needs to be visual, it needs to be movement, it needs to be entertainment.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting if you want to take this from this broader perspective of esports. I like to compare it to like what happened with the .com craze. Mm-hmm. In the 80s and 90s. And what happened in the .com craze was there was .coms for everything. There was candy shops that were .coms. You could just order like a bar of chocolate. It was dumb. I mean, these were the dumbest ideas that like you could have possibly thought about. And then what happened was the bubble popped. And it formulated its way, and then .com and the internet became much more of a way to do everything besides what we're doing now, you and I, but also commerce, play, everything. Everything that you could possibly do now is in the computer, especially now because of the pandemic, has pushed us even further to this point. So it found its groove. It's found its way, the dot-com craze. As far as esports, it's funny because a lot of money was pumped into it. A lot of money has been pumped into it, to teams, to leagues, to all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
What I see what's going on right now is they're saying all of these investors put all this money in, and they like had to sit down at some point and say, we need to figure out how we're going to make money at this. Mm-hmm. Because we're not making anything. And, you know, they got some people together and they decided that the content sells way more than the actual games themselves.
Absolutely.
Because the people who make the games, the publishers, are going to make the money from the games who are gamers playing. It's almost like two worlds. It's the world of the gamer that plays the game, and the gamer that plays the game, whether that game be free download or whether they pay for the download, that goes directly to the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, esports, as we know, started by the publishers as a marketing campaign for more people to play their games. So an entire world of content was created now with the teams, with the leagues, and everything else. And that now is going to the teams to make money on the content. Yeah. Because the teams have nothing else to do except make money on content. So it's almost like it's two worlds of entertainment.
Yeah, that's all they can do. It is definitely all entertainment.
Yeah, overall, sure, it's all entertainment. And that's what I always said. I said esports, you can't compare esports to sports because
it's all digital. It's just totally different. It's changing. It changes too fast. There's too many new games.
Right, and I actually was I replied,
football's football forever, you know? Right.
And I replied to somebody on LinkedIn because they were talking about the term esports. What does that mean? Like, why do people call it esports? I don't even like calling it esports. As I've said that many times, I think it should be called like digital competitive play or something.
Competitive gaming.
Yeah, or competitive gaming, which is what it was called
That's what it is.
Yeah, when Jonathan.
Because they even have like farming simulator tournaments. Like,
yeah.
Even speedrunning is competitive gaming.
Yeah, it's just competitive gaming.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what when Fatality was playing in the late 90s and 2000, and you met him, right?
Yeah, I met him.
So when he was playing, that's what they called it. It was competitive gaming. It wasn't even called esports. He's just kind of stupid.
I think they just wanted to edge it up and make it more, like, tangible for people who, like, maybe aren't in it. But then it just ends up confusing them.
Tangible?
Yeah, well, like,
did they want to attract investors from the sports industry?
Yeah, maybe they thought that's like, hey, they know what sports is, so let's call this esports. It's electronic, competitive, anything. So
who? I mean, think about all the first investors, guys like Rick Fox from the Lakers, Shaquille O'Neal, Alex Rodriguez, Jennifer Lopez. So we had all these people dumping their money into.
I mean, to be fair, Rick Fox did it because his son was into it.
Right.
Like, he did know what it was.
What about Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks?
Mm.
A guy by the name of Andy Miller, who owns part of the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah.
So these are all, and then Robert Kraft from New England. They were
with the traveling of like international tournaments, like who needed that for competitive gameplay? Except for what we're actually, you know, maybe that does make more sense that once COVID's done, because with all the latency issues and cheating issues that are happening, because they're not all in the same place.
You have to have it in person. But do you need an arena for people to come and watch it? Because they're watching it online anyway.
Yeah, because I've been to like tournaments and it does get a little like.
Unless there's some
stale watching it for 45 minutes,
something else going on,
yeah,
like a GameCon,
yeah,
where you could do more fun things, then it makes more sense. But
you need it,
yeah. If it's just esports tournaments.
Yeah.
I'll be bored out of my mind about this.
I've been to them, and as a lover of games, it does get a little boring, because if you're watching League of Legends, nothing happens in the first 20 minutes. They're just farming.
Right. And even when you go to a professional sporting event, whether that be at a racetrack or in a baseball field or a football field, there's other things going on at the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the game itself. There's the tailgating, and then there's like games outside, and there's like ring tosses and football tosses and baseball.
Really?
Throws. Yeah.
I've never really been to one.
You should do it.
Yeah, I went to like 2 sporting events in my life.
There's all kinds of, they do all kinds of things, you know, but whatever. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up. I think this was
a good one.
Yeah, I had a great time. Make sure you get a good night's rest so you're out shoveling in the morning or digging your car out if you have to get anywhere. So you have to get the bread and milk.
Gotta get the bread and milk.
You should have done that before. Anyway, all right. Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Good seeing you, Jen. Always a pleasure. And everybody out there, stay safe. Have a good one.